Colectivo Internacional.
Con tu host favorito, Arturo Mendoza.
Jeffrey, welcome back.
Thank you. It's great to be here, Arturo.
It's great to have you here. We're recording this one day before the election. And it seems to be very interesting times for everyone. I don't want to get too much into politics, but I'm sure we'll delve in from time to time. I do think it's important, however, to mention when we're doing this. Because the world
context.
Is, yeah, the world is going to be different tomorrow, one way or another.
Right.
So picking up where we left off, we were discussing a couple of ideas and routes that we could pursue after the first episode. So I don't want to intrude too much, and I would prefer if you would just pick it up where we left off and feel free to choose where you want to take it from here.
Okay. Well, tomorrow is November 3rd, 2020. The American election is happening. And what got my attention today was a couple articles, I think, including the New York Times, saying that the world is watching and the world is afraid that democracy is crumbling. And what is missing from all of these articles is that we've been dismantling democracy one inch at a time for decades. And I wasn't necessarily around to be a witness decades ago in the same mindset and knowledge that I have today. But when we allow compromise into the truth of a situation, inch by inch, into our life, either individually or as a nation, there cannot not be consequences. So a little bit of poison, a little bit of cocaine, a little bit of high fructose corn syrup, a little bit of the electoral college is totally fucked up and makes no sense whatsoever. We've been fat, dumb, and happy and let these compromises to what democracy might possibly be infiltrate, or in terms of the electoral college, these compromises have been around for maybe as long as the system has been around. I'm not a historian, so I don't know when that the electoral college came in. So the point is that when we allow compromise and lying into our lives, there cannot not be consequences. So if there is some dramatic outcome or series of outcomes from this election, it has very little to do with this election. It has to do with what we've been setting into motion for a very long time. And I think we're going to see very serious consequences. I'm curious to know what they're going to be.
Do you think it's going to make any difference if one of the candidates wins over the other?
No, because Americans are, and most of the world nowadays, we talk past each other. We don't listen to each other, and we don't know how to listen to each other. You know, you can go to any high-level university anywhere in the world, and no one is teaching the number one most important human skill in terms of getting what you want out of life, which is knowing how to listen. No one ever became less powerful, less influential, less successful by being an incredibly good listener. No one.
What do you think that is? Some of the subjects that we were discussing earlier on were about how all of this understanding, all of these realizations that you've had and that you have made your own experience regarding a wide variety of subjects, how do they relate to the quote-unquote regular individual? How does somebody that's in the midst of all of this can start to apply and realize?
Well, if I want a better life, I have to realize that a better life comes through human beings. It doesn't come through the internet. It doesn't come through a better job. It doesn't come through getting better grades. All of those are artificial ideas that are secondary. I can have the best grades at Harvard. I can have the best title and job description in my company. But if I have minimal relationship to human beings around me, whether on a personal or professional or some combination of both level, I don't have a good life. And yet another idea totally absent from industrial education. When I say industrial education, I mean the mill of universities globally that is not teaching life skills, living skills, happiness skills.
If I heard you correctly, one of the most important things in your way of perceiving reality is improving the quality of your personal relationships, human relationships, to begin with. I'm not necessarily saying that's the end, but that is the beginning of the conversation. Am I getting it right?
Yes.
Okay. You touch onto something that I want to share something with you and hear what you have to say. One of the things that matter the most to me as a human being right now, it's the quality of my communication skills. Because it's so absent from the mainstream outlets of not only media, but pretty much everywhere. You get snippets, you get just superficial points of view, very polarized expressions. There's no room for nuance. There's no room for explanations. And this opened up a lot of things for me, and it became kind of my quest to understand what a good form of effective communication looks like. And effective, not only meaning that I want to get from point A to point B, or I want to get this or extract this out of you or learn this or the other. Effective as in fulfilling the purpose of communication itself, which is I want to share a message, let's say, to you. But I'm not going to be an effective communicator if I just share the message the way that I want to share it. I will be, however, a good communicator if I adapt my message in a way that you, the recipient of the message, will be able to actually get it, to actually receive what I'm trying to transmit. Not only I don't see that happening, coming back a little bit to your example about listening skills being almost completely gone from the conversation, after I have shared my message in a way that you could actually get it, then I have to shut up in order to hear what you have to say. And when I say shut up, I really mean shut up. Not just close my mouth and wait for you to finish talking so I could tell you what I already wanted to tell you 10 minutes ago out of the first two sentences that you uttered. I mean, really be silent and present with you, integrating the message that you're sharing. So then I can answer, but this isn't a going back and forth and taking it somewhere necessarily and seeing who's right or who's wrong, agreeing or disagreeing. I think, and it goes way beyond that. It's creating a bond and bridging ideas and different perceptions and values and perspectives and what comes out of that. It's really interesting and important to me at the moment. What do you make of all of that?
This endemic pandemic of not listening is very interesting to me. If my friend opposite me, in this case you, Arturo, are making a presentation that takes 3 minutes long, and I'm not giving any real attention, the monkey brain in Jeffrey is just doing its thing, waiting until it has a chance to talk. That is the state that we're normally in. Normal in our abnormal world. The recognition of this brings up some really dense, meaty ideas. One of which is that this habit that I have, that we all have, of can't wait to say my thing, can't wait to throw the ball back, can't wait to prove whatever it is. That interests me because what that's saying, and the universe isn't stupid, is that I have very little confidence in what's going on in my mind. I have very little confidence in my ideas. And why is that a pandemic? It's a pandemic because no one is thinking for themselves. We are in a period in history, the lowest, in a certain sense, in my opinion, where the knowledge that we accumulate is from some study, some goddamn article, some university, some pronouncement, some webcast, some mainstream this, that, or the other media, some teacher, some friend. We are not using our minds, and our ideas are not our own. And how does that manifest in this endless need, false need, for you to know what important shit is going on in my brain? We want, the monkey brain wants to regurgitate all of this crap that we, and I include myself, I have no personal experience of this quote-unquote wisdom or knowledge that my monkey brain just wants you to know right here and right now, and I'm not going to really listen to what you're saying because my drivel wants to come out. So all of this lack of interest in really listening, actively listening, and clearing the decks of the brain so that someone else's being, someone else's real thinking can enter in, all of this is a result of having no real ideas of my own, of your own, of our own. So that's one aspect of it.
It's a very interesting one, and I think we're onto something here. It takes me back to my own experiences regarding reflection, regarding, questioning beliefs and points of view and ideas that were so much intertwined in who I thought I was that it was very difficult to create enough distance for me to even begin to see it. I think that's where the greatest challenge is. I am reminded of a little example. I don't really remember where it came from, but there was this person just seeing a fly against a glass, a window, trying to escape. And effectively, the window was closed and the fly couldn't go anywhere. And you could clearly see that he had no idea why. And the reflection was, how many times have I been the fly? How many times have I been so entangled and in the midst of my own stories, ideas, preconceptions, conditionings, so on and so forth, that I can't see my own prison? Now, the way I see it, the way I see the modern world, and I'm very interested to hear your counterpart on this, the modern world regarding technology, regarding science, regarding the natural laws. Personally, I use it as a stepping stone to then make it my own experience when and where I can. I find useful to know shit. However, I don't direct my life blindly out of that knowledge until I have made it my own experience. And even then, I am very aware not to project that personal experience onto you, onto anybody else, because it might turn out completely different for yourself. And I think doing that works twofold. It allows the experiencer to have a clear distinction of what is true and what's not for oneself. And on the same token, to take it lightly and not trying to impose this, that, or the other on anybody else. You can be inviting, you can share. You know, I'm very much up to that practical knowledge and its applications to the mundane of the world, but without trying to impose, without being dogmatic, because then you're crossing the other person's line. What do you make out of all of this?
I think the whole question of imposing is very related to the lack of authenticity of my thinking. The less that my thinking, the less that my ideas, and the less that my concepts are my own, the more the monkey brain wants to impose them on whoever's opposite me in a conversation. And the more authentic my thinking is, the more that I've really worked with an idea or a question on my own, through my own experience, which does include reading and knowledge, conventional knowledge, there's something magical that happens, which is the less driven I am to impose what's mine on someone else. And this is just coming to me right now, here's why. If it takes me whatever quantity and quality of time and attention, whether it's years or days or hours, to come to a conclusion for me, by me, through me, I have something very special, which is an appreciation for what went into having or coming to a new conclusion that's authentically mine. And having that appreciation means I know I suspect how much time and effort it would take the other person. And they might not be situated to do that kind of pondering for themselves, which means there's nothing I can say that can, quote unquote, convince.
Right.
And so, you know, we have this idea of, you know, this spiritual idea, spiritual, whatever that means, that by being who I am, other people will be drawn in. By not forcing myself, other people will be drawn in. And all of that's fine and dandy and makes perfect sense. But most of us are white knuckling to not make pronouncements, to not be dogmatic, to not convince. And when we do our own thinking, we're given a new experience. And the experience is, I can't convince. No matter how much I try, I can't convince. Just like I can't tell you how to become the winner of Wimbledon. If I've won Wimbledon or any great achievement through my words, I can't tell you how to do it. There is no way. You have to figure that out for yourself. And knowledge has been dismantled in this day and age because we've completely separated effort from knowledge. Anyone who reads any jack shit article thinks that they own that knowledge, and you don't. And I don't.
Nor I do.
Right.
Right. I love it. In a way, if I heard you correctly, you are saying that the process is the goal. That's why you show appreciation for the process itself. The struggle, the understanding, the path walked, and what that means for you, the uniqueness that brings to your life, and how that, and I heard this from my master, from my teacher, and it stuck with me, was, it's a blessing and a curse that, if we're going to speak about truth or spirituality or whatever that may be, I cannot give it to you. It's a blessing. I cannot take it away from you. It's a blessing. And on the same token, I cannot give it to you and I can't take it away from you. And that's a curse, depending on where you stand. Because either way, you're going to have to go through the process, your process. And I think I heard between the lines of what you were saying that sometimes, even if we're not imposing, even if we're not being, if we're being careful not to be dogmatic, this could be used as a more subtle weaponry to be more attractive, more appealing, more liked, more respected. And then once again, the whatever you're trying to avoid, it's coming through the side or the back door. Right?
Right.
So it all ties back to me full circle when I say, okay, what's driving every action? I've said this many times. It makes all the sense in the world to me. It's not what you do itself, but the inner quality that you bring to the action that you're doing. On the outside, it looks exactly the same. But the way you are experiencing it, it's not. And I think that's what makes all the difference. Now, I don't know if you want to pursue this line of thinking or where would you want to take this. I have something in my mind, which is, you want to take it full circle. You and I were discussing before starting recording the technocratic society and how it's come to its own demise, so on and so forth. I think that will be a good place to pick back up where we started. But you go, sir.
When we throw knowledge at a problem, we are killing certain opportunities for us to grow and have our own authentic understanding. And the reason why humanity is increasingly following the path of experts who aren't is because we've never had a real relationship to knowledge. And the example that I am reminded of from Maurice Nickel, who was one of the students of Gurdjieff, is when young children ask questions, anything from why is someone not nice to me to why are the stars, why do they shine? Any real question, parents throw knowledge at these questions. And the image that Nickel gave in his commentaries was, it's like throwing gasoline at a candle. It flames out, and it not only creates a big flame that's very temporary, it also puts out the candle. So by handing children all these answers all the time, which is what we do, we're killing the inner quest, the seeker, the authentic human being. We're destroying all of that with a typically an answer that fits into the box, that leaves nothing left for exploration. And one of the examples of technology not having served us very well is the animal kingdom. It suggested that the task set for the first human beings was to identify what each creature was created for and what is their role. And we have endless examples of people who, in today's world, who have been able to train creatures, even insects, reptiles, up to mammals, to do incredibly interesting things. And we invented the wheel. Who knows when that was? And then we spent the next many, many centuries investigating all the things that can be done with the wheel. But we don't do that with animals. We know that there are some gifted human beings who have trained animals into a higher level of intelligence. We don't investigate that. We don't practice that. A creature, a living creature, is a far more perfected entity than a wheel. But look where we give our attention to. We give our attention to dead things that are non-living, that begin to rot and decay from the moment that they're created. But we don't give, as a society, attention to living things that have perhaps great hidden possibilities, but because we're not investigating, we're not giving time and attention, we're not learning anything. So the technocratic world has given basically all its attention to dead stuff, to non-living things, whether it's a circuit or a hammer. That's where we give our attention, to the non-living, dead world that's decaying from the minute it's created. My phone that I need and use and have quite the relationship with is decaying. There are features that don't work as well as they did a month ago and 2 months ago. So we're in the consequences of having given inordinate attention to non-living shit, almost to the level of worshiping it. You know, if you want to know what God is for people, look at where they're giving their attention. If I'm giving my attention to video games, if I'm giving my attention to being connected all day long with machines, that's my God. That's what I believe in. Those are my actions. You see, God is an action. It's not some concept. We say we believe in God. Well, that's so cheap. And by the way, I don't care what anyone's definition is. That's your business. I'm not a religion guy. I'm a universe guy.
There are so many paths that I'd like to pursue with everything that you just said. There are three main... Yeah, I think there are three lines of thinking. On the one hand, you say that by the way we approach reality, we kill our capacity to be curious. And that predisposes us to be better captured and faster captured by the system that we have created, that indeed cherishes progress, technology, artifacts, above everything else, including nature. And then you take it full circle, saying like, hey, what if we steer our attention towards the natural world? The possibilities there are much greater. They're much more interesting. They're deeper. They are more divine in a way. And I agree with all of that. And in addition to that, I also get to see that the way we come to where we are did not happen from one day to the next. It was a gradual process led by generations of people who had no freaking clue what they were doing. They were just basically going through the motions of the time and the era and the dogma and whatnot, and the very few that did not align with those ways of living, well, they pay a very high price, indeed. Most of them, and many of them, with their own lives. Now, from this moment on, like not knowing what we know now, in the current state of affairs, I think we have barely touched upon the basis of how we got here. Now we're here, and it seems like more now than ever, we have no clue of where we're going. And we just created this momentum, and we can't stop for a wide variety of reasons, from addiction to incentives, to greed, to power, money, so on and so forth. On an individual level, I have a couple of ideas as to what one could do to begin to live differently. But I'd like to hear your take on all of this.
Many of my ideas, I, to be truthful, did not come up with on my own. I read them. But they make the most sense to me. And the idea about where we can and should go that makes the most sense to me is a four-word phrase, which is from the Ringing Cedars series, perfect the dwelling land. If we're not perfecting the land that I live on, that you live on, that we live on, if we're not actively perfecting it, making it more perfect, making it cleaner, healthier, more productive, more alive, if we're not doing that, then what the hell are we going to do with the rest of the universe if we're handed all the technology that we think we want to go and conquer other worlds and take them over? If I'm not going to take care of my own shit, why would I be worthy of conquering other planets, which seems to get a lot of people's attention nowadays? Also from the Ringing Cedars series is that we will be helped in ways that are not known. We will be helped in our lives if the goals in my life are aligned with the goals of the universe. But if I want something different than what the universe wants, if I want a helicopter, a private jet, a 30,000 square foot house that has destroyed how many plants and animals in order to build that house, if this is what I really want, if I want to be divorced from nature, if I want to not care for the body, which is apparently an incredible instrument, if I don't want to care for that, how can I expect that the universe is going to be interested in me? And how can I expect unexpected help, synchronicities, good luck, opportunities? How can I expect good stuff to happen if I'm not interested in being good to the universe? So, you see, most of us are not really connecting with the idea of something is helping us. We are not connecting with that idea. That's an abstract idea at best and a rejected idea of most of us. Most of us feel that we have no real purpose, that humanity and life is a machine, it's an accident. And I happen to have a deeply meaningful, satisfying, interesting, happy life. So the ideas that I have work for me. Show me people who believe that the universe is meaningless and show me what their life looks like. I'm not sure that any of them have what I want. So, if I perfect my dwelling land, if I make my little corner of the world, whether it's my street corner, my garden, my 100 acres, my 2 acres, if I'm working to make this into a paradise, my feeling is the people who wrote the Ringing Cedars series, they've nailed it. They've made the case. Oh, simple. Don't figure out how to stop global warming. Don't figure out how to get other people to do your shit. Jeffrey, figure out how to make wherever you are a paradise, a healthy, clean, environmentally responsible corner of the planet. And if I do that, maybe other people will do it too. But I'm not going to wait for other people to figure it out. I need to do my work. There is no them. Who is them? The government. Who is that? Who is the UN? Who is Russia? China? There is no Russia. There is no China. There are people, and we're not relating to people. We're relating to this anti-human, anti-nature, anti-rational idea of them. Well, there is no them. Start with me. Start with you. Stop thinking about them.
I love the concepts that you have highlighted here. I think they're beautiful, and then they are some of the central parts of my life, and one of them being personal responsibility. You hammered it, and it's where it all begins. Now, before having the courage to take care of one's life, and requires a lot of that, plus many more things, I think it is important to understand the nature of our conditioning. Because you brought up something that some people will relate to and some others will not. And of course, no form of expression is truly universal. Meaning, my form of conditioning, being born in your neighbor country, Mexico, and having grown differently than the way you did, allowed me to transcend different types of conditioning. And I think that will be the same for somebody in India and for somebody else in Australia and somebody else in China, Russia, Central Europe, so on and so forth. The kinds of conditionings to overcome are different. And we need to look into them so we're able to see them. And from there on, we're able to start working towards transcending them and creating better ones. And then we can add on the personal responsibility aspect of it to take care of our own shit and to take our stance in the world and to see what we're bringing forth, why we're living the way we're living, why do we think the way we think, why we do what we do, why we pursue the things that we pursue. And bringing back the example that you mentioned about, you know, the big house and the private jet and so on and so forth, this isn't something that's essential, right? And it's a form of global conditioning that most people, with very few exceptions, have. And the ones who don't went through the motions anyway. At some point in their lives, they thought that was that, until it was not. And in my own experience, it feels like we must all cross the same river of our own lives to unlearn, to get cleaned out, to do the work, to take on personal responsibility, and then to live life differently, having gone through the mud. The way that you opened up this whole line of thinking, it's beautiful to me because it reminded me that the notion of what I see as a full human being in so far, it's not mine either. I learned it. And I'm fine with it because it makes more sense, a lot more sense than many of the other crap that I see out there. Meaning, let's do our work and we'll grow and we'll learn and we'll transcend things and we'll be better, faster, higher, stronger, more knowledgeable, more sensitive, more in tune with nature, more connected, so on and so forth. And then once you've done that, share it with the immediacy of your reality, the immediacy of your community, the immediacy of your surroundings, the immediacy of the living beings around you, and see how that transforms in consequence your own world. Do not isolate yourself either, like be aware of what's like the shit show that's out there, and know that, and I think this is what you said in a way, know that this is where you can, this is where real change happens, not out there in the grandiose perspective of things and I'm going to change the world and solve global warming and blah blah blah. Do your work silently, diligently, fully, lovingly, and watch your life transform. And if by doing that we can be a source of inspiration to others so they can do the same within their own purview, within their own individuality, within their own means, I see that as, insofar, the best possibility for a new reality, a better one. Now, you mentioned a couple of times the teachings that you learned through the series of books. How do you propose someone, I'd appreciate if you could give a couple of examples in different contexts, could start to apply, take the very first step towards living life differently?
Take 5 minutes a day to think about what you really want. Take 5 minutes a week if you don't have 5 minutes a day. If you have 10 minutes, even better. Give yourself time to think about what you want specifically. The Ringing Cedars series suggests that the human mind is the most powerful, human thought is the most powerful energy in the universe. Now, I don't know what that means, but I like exploring that. And I'm going to, and I am. If I give all of my attention to the New York Times and the Washington Post and to everything else that is normal for us to give our time to, entertainment, sports, the family. If I'm giving all my time and attention to what is, and close to zero to what I really want, then I haven't conducted the experiment. And my life is an experiment in pursuing the impossible.
Which is?
Well, one aspect is the impossible is solutions to questions and problems of a very practical nature that I never could have figured out for myself. So as you know, Arturo, thanks to you and knowing you in large part, I live in a place in Mexico that is a very protected magical kingdom ranch where there are many exciting projects that I've been invited to give my input, and one way or another have been told you'll make your living here as long as you're interested in contributing what you're interested in. And so at the ranch, we do podcasts, we do fitness, we're building a beautiful greenhouse made of all non-toxic materials. We're building a sweat lodge. We are interacting with the wolves that live here, the dogs, the cats, the sheep, the horses, the burros. We are hosting spiritual events, meditation events, ayahuasca events, and we're also developing a relationship with people in the region for, let's call it historical and artisanal and fitness tourism. And that's just what's appeared on the horizon in the short time that I've lived here. All of these things excite me and interest me. And I forgot to mention perhaps the most central, which is growing healthy things so that not only is our food not toxic, but that it actually raises our vibration, which is maybe a topic for another conversation. So I have made a practice for a couple of years now of making room to think about what is not possible in my life and what do I want. And I am living a lifestyle in another country, no longer in my hometown of New York City, that a percentage of my friends and acquaintances says would be impossible for them to do. It wasn't any more possible for me. So doing the impossible, making room to think about what is not possible, that is my dream, that is your dream, is extremely important. Not because I read it in a book, even though I did, but because I practice giving myself time to think about what would it mean to have the greatest health in the universe? What would that mean, that strange phrase? I'm trying to find out.
How is it going so far?
Gangster.
I love it. I love it. And as a brief closing note, this is a good place to end this one, unless there's something else you'd like to add. It all comes back to what you actually do. It's what it ties everything up together and what makes lasting change beyond thinking, beyond visualizing, beyond wishing, beyond praying, beyond planning, beyond believing. Action is the great differentiator that makes things come to fruition. And it takes a lot of courage, amongst many other things. And it's also the only way, because utilizing the example that you just gave, and by the way, it's a great pleasure to have you here, and you know this. if you hadn't done what you did, you wouldn't be here where you are. And you had all the rationale behind as to why you should not do it or why you could not do it. And I don't think you are the great exception of humanity. I think it's sort of available to every one of us, one way or another. And I agree with your approach. Is the very first thing is to ask ourselves, what do we really want? And be able and open to listen.
Right. To ask myself again and again, what do I really want? We're here to get what we want. You know, I'm going to use that word, God, again. God doesn't make junk. God doesn't make junk lives, junk human beings, junk experiences, junk countries, junk cities. Everything that has been made directly from the unknown is incredibly perfect and beautiful. Anything that's less than that has had human intervention fucking things up, lowering the vibration, making compromises, acting out of fear, acting out of habit. So we are living in the period in history of anti-rationality. And if you want what you already have, keep doing what you're already doing. But if you want something different, at least give it some airtime in your attention and then see where it takes you. And I have a lot more to say about that, and I think that would be something for one of our next conversations.
I'd love to hear it. And I want to close this episode by saying that one of the greatest things that I have learned from you is that you get to choose your own story. You call it fairy tale. I like story better. But I think it goes to the same place, which is if your belief system, if your way of doing things gives you energy, empowers you, fulfills you, fills you with the things that you want in your life, then that is a great way to keep going. This is a great, not only a great starting point, but a great fuel, renewal of the renewable kind along the way. So with that, I'll tell you until next time.
Perfect.
Love it.